Hey, welcome to the Morning Mic Check. I'm Pat Brown here with Mike Metzger. Mike and I have known each other for a while now. I first met him around 2010, and he's become one of the key mentors in my life. Over the years, we've had countless conversations, and in almost every one, I've walked away having discovered something new. Mike has this unique ability where he can reframe a conversation, and you begin to discover a deeper reality around you. It's a bit like Alice tumbling down the rabbit hole. I'm releasing these conversations as an invitation to follow me as I go down that rabbit hole.
I shouldn't have taken a bite right now, but
mm-hmm. Fire away.
All right, Mike, while you're finishing your early morning breakfast here, I'll cue us up.
Yeah, way to expose me.
Well, good morning again. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've talked in many conversations about purpose and meaning and gone down that path. That, from my perspective, has been more of a, like, how do I as an individual process this? I'd like to broach that subject a little bit more here from an organizational level. So if I'm leading a team of people, if I'm overseeing an organization of some sort, or even leading a business, a common problem that occurs really specifically in the tech industry that I've noticed is we actually have a really fortunate position where the demand for our jobs is pretty high. And so it's very easy to go find a job in another organization if you're pretty qualified at what you do. And so it's actually a really challenging piece to keep good talent at times, which I think provides a very real practical justification for why it's important that people in an organization feel a sense of purpose or calling at what they're doing, really to keep them at your company and to keep them within your organization. So I'd like to go a little bit towards the route of, how do we do that? How do we help people understand within our own, whether it's, again, a team, a whole company, just a small organization, whatever that looks like, how do we help keep people by really tapping into a sense of filling them with purpose and calling in that regard?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think we're really up against it for a number of reasons. And so I think there are some solutions, but ultimately what's mainly provided some sense of purpose, or, you know, I'm in this for something beyond me, invariably turns out to be an appeal to something beyond me. So if you just start with a basic notion, here's a big challenge that is particularly true in tech. It's kind of whatever the company's purpose and mission they talk about, blah, it's just cotton candy. It's just, okay, let's get through this. Mm-hmm. Because we are the brass tacks people. And I don't know where brass tacks came from, but yeah, I'm sure it was furniture industry. And so it's the idea of, I don't know what I'm building here. It ultimately doesn't matter. I'm being paid good bucks to put on brass tacks. And that's what I get down to, is brass tacks. Hmm. And so that's compounded in a pandemic when you have high unemployment, because then people will also say, I don't give a rootin' tootin' about purpose. I need a paycheck.
Sure.
And once you've got that, and you have and tech has done, if you watch the tech world's done particularly well, if the market bears any relationship to reality. So again, you can just kind of, you know, give, tip your hat to purpose and the rest, and just get by it all, so you can get down to business. You can get down to the real world. And this is a challenge, because at the end of the day, what causes people to find real meaning in their work, to find a sense of satisfaction, not a sense of, well, I'm just grinding out two more years till I get my retirement, is there is a sense of, somehow this is making the world a better place. Somehow I'm improving the way that people live. In other words, you don't feel like you've gone home and said, Well, hon, we made some major improvements on the guillotine. So we think we'll be able to kill more efficiently with less energy. I mean, you don't feel, if you went home feel like that, you sit there and say, I think I'm going to find another job. But in fact, what other than the few voices like we talked about Tristan Harris before and his TEDx talk that then turned into a TED talk, there's a mountain of evidence, and it's growing, about all of the downsides of tech. That the tech world just has trouble coming to grips with. Because you might read about rising rates of suicide attendant to spending so much time on such a small screen and what it does to the brain and what it does to your sense of well-being. But as soon as you say the word well-being, with most people I know in tech, you watch their eyes glaze over. And then in our faith tradition, Pat, even bigger challenges, you don't think anything about that. The whole point, or a lot of the point why you're there at work anyway, is that it's a platform for evangelism. So you're primarily thinking, well, their well-being would be served if they came to Jesus.
Right.
Which, of course, these are called the whole lies of partial truth, I'd call them that. Because a half-truth is a whole lie. And so the half-truth is that, of course, coming to Christ is ultimately, critical. But the whole lie is, if that's all salvation is reduced down to, there's just, again, a boatload of research that shows behaviorally and a sense of purpose and well-being, these people don't do any better than people who don't know Christ. And that simply has to be said. Just like Tristan Harris was the one who finally had to say, we're creating addictive behaviors. Does anybody want to talk about that? And so his movement was called Time Well Spent. And so in the tech world, the challenge that the company you're at, one of the challenges it finds is someone who is particularly good and in demand feels, you could phrase it this way, when I go to work, I don't feel it's really time well spent. I think I'd be happier doing this somewhere else. And then you have to ask the question, why do you feel that way at where you work?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is most of the stuff on, quote, corporate culture, purpose, blah, 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 are hooks hung in midair.
What do you mean by that?
Not hooked into anything.
Hmm.
So you can do a very, you can have this, and this is part of why, I think Google and Facebook and the rest are finding is, a lot of the assumption, for example, in Google was just collect all the world's information. As they share it, the world will get better. And then they begin to find there are leaks in this dike all over the place. And you begin to go, I don't think that's what we ultimately should be doing. There seems to be some sort of, because now we're stuck with, well, but not that, but not that. Yeah, but more of that, not that. And when you have 40, 50,000 people working for you and they all have their personal view on not that, but this, no, that. Now we shut that down. We ought to limit that. Twitter has the same problem right now. Jack Dorsey, his 2019 TED Talk was basically a reflection on wish I'd known what I know now when I started Twitter. Because the first time I ever heard of Twitter was a small little article in The Economist. And basically the founders were all, their hearts were all aflutter because now by reducing everything just in 140 words, they found a very simple way to tweet out the information that will change the world and make it a better place. Now, I added there, well, I think they did feel like it would improve the world. See, all this tech just feels, tech, in my opinion, operates under this adage. More is better, faster is better. Tech, more tech is better. Sure. If it can be done, it should be done. It will make it better. But nobody ever asks, for example, if Verizon or Comcast or your cable provider can provide you 100 times the speed you're getting right now, in a tech world, you just go, yeah. But you never ask, so everybody in our home can be on faster connection, downloading more, all individually in their various rooms, and that's going to be better. Well, no one stops and thinks. It's what Neil Postman talked about as a technopoly. And a technopoly, the overarching story that rules is technology is all good. So if you're in the tech world, I know it sounds like a slam on tech, and here we are using tech, but it's not a slam on the tech world. The tech world has no larger picture or being or purpose that would say, no, that's not helpful here, a little less here. Moderation might be the good word. It has no, if there's no governing being or sense of purpose, then there's no governor or brakes on the technology. Just like when you and I were kids, or at least I would occasionally go to the go-kart track, and you get on the go-kart, and what's the bummer about the go-karts at the go-kart track?
They got that top speed. They can only go so fast.
Yeah, screw that governor. But that's what tech doesn't have, in my opinion. And when you are particularly good at it, you are basically can be an independent contractor for whoever wants to speed up the tech, which goes under the assumption that more is better. And the human capacity just, there's a couple of very easily accessible books, Gene Twenge, unfortunate last name, but really, so W-T-E-N-G-E, her book Distracted, for example. And, but Distracted will talk about that all communication is a form of interruption. When I say, what I just said that right now, for example, interrupted your brain patterns and your listening patterns because you don't know what I'm going to say next or when or how I'm going to say it or with what force. So all communication is a form of interruption. Even the fan going in the background, even the music going in the background, even this and that. Well, we live in a world now where the interruptions are so fast and so much that the attention span, well known, of Americans, but around the world, is shrinking. It is now so short, there's some believe that after four words, someone's attention is already drifting off. If you can't say it in four words, well, how are you going to, Pat, try to tie people's work into something beyond just come here, make bucks?
Yeah. In addition to that, come here, make bucks. The other one is come here and build your career and then go elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, those are... I see it. I see, I have friends and they've done well in the tech world. But the odds are, A, they're not listening to this podcast, which I understand that. I wouldn't listen to this. And B, it just, you can tell right away they're going, they just begin to, you can see it on their faces, yada, 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 yada. Because if there's one thing that came out of the American experiment, it is going back to the early 1800s, was Americans this European traditions were boring, stuffy, and irrelevant. And what they wanted were practical people. That's the exact practical. And practical people were known for their fervency, not their education. They were known for get it done, not should it be done. They were known for how, but not very good with but why. And so Americans are famous for their how-to books, and this is rampant through even our faith tradition, our Christian faith tradition, is a number of how-to books. And so that all plays into the tech world, and that's what Neil Postman's book Technopoly, Tech TechNOPOLY, I think is worth reading. If you're in the tech world or have any interest in this, I think it's the most accessible. And Postman, who passed away a few years ago, said, it's fine to be in a technological world because tech is technique. And the mechanisms that come out of that, but it can never answer why. But once you're in, so you can be in a technological world, and that's helpful. He said, we're not in a technological world. We're in a technopoly. And a technopoly is tech plus monopoly. It's when tech monopolizes all thinking. And when it monopolizes, that's what the word monopoly means. It is the one. It's the one way we think. In a tech world, if it can be done, it ought to be done. So the how it can be done tells us why, because it ought to be done. And once you're there, then you have no way of thinking about governors, moderation, boundaries, brackets. And you see this with parents who will say, my 7-year-old wants their iPhone. The parent begins to go, I just don't. Well, see, why would a 7-year-old ever think, I need an iPhone? Because they see everybody around them,
right? Yep.
Sleeps with them. Behavior's caught, not taught. And so the inconsistency of the parents is, and then parents feel like, well, you have to capitulate. Or we say, no, not till you're 18. Well, then that's a nice artificial. So what are they going to do? They're going to spend more time with their friends who got their iPhone when they were 12. My parents says, no, I can't control my kid. No, you never controlled how you understand technology.
Yeah, that's a really, wow.
Now, now we've talked about this before, so listeners should be accustomed to this. If you're here for the first time, go back to the beginning. But it is true that in older church, Christian traditions, the gospel was best understood as depicted in our sexuality, in our sexuality as male and female. It was best depicted in marriage, sex. So here's why I mentioned this. Once you lose a big picture for why sex, why sexuality, you really are reduced down to technique. Now, I know that porn has been around for who knows how long. But literally in the tech world, it has exploded. And what has also exploded are the various techniques. So we'll leave it at that, because anyone with even a dull imagination knows what I'm talking about. And there's nothing more empty than a Fortune 5 industry. That's how large it is. It would be a Fortune 5, not a Fortune 100. A Fortune 5 industry, all built around sexual technique. where you're feeling some of that on a different level in a tech company where, you know, it's hard to bring up that, well, I happen to know some of the people in your industry, actually at your company. I know some of the people are in early on. I know that all of them that I know that were in early on are now all gone. They've left. I know they made a killing financially. And I know that several of them who have suffered what they would call to this day anxiety disorders because of everything they had to shelve. And these people happen to be Christians, and they had to shelve so much. Now, you might sit there and say, well, Mike, that's really a bad example, makes bad law. But the fact of the matter is, one of the largest employers in our region here also has is another tech company. We'll leave out its name, but it too has because in knowing in the counseling industry, a disproportionately high number of people in need of counseling over anxiety disorders, depression, and what have you. And it's just this sense of we overpromise, underpay, and just drive. And you ask yourself, why in your company so many drove so hard that they literally just really did some damage to their soul? I mean, one of them I know, when that person left, it was just out to the West Coast to find the most beautiful place they could as close to the ocean and just kind of do what they wanted to do for the rest of their life. Now you ask yourself, is that the purpose of life? Now, the reason they could do that is, again, made a financial killing, didn't have to work again. There's another large company here, and we'll leave out because the owner is rather famous in this region, and some of the people early on, I mean, one of them I know, came away with enough to live for the rest of his life, but he also came away with what I would call not a very great marriage, and certainly never struck me as really a happy happy camper. And tried all sorts of various things to try to find some joy. But if you're around him, it just wasn't happy. And a lot of it was just drilled out of him. Now, again, I enjoy this morning on a hot, muggy Maryland morning, conditioned air that comes through technology. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not a Luddite. The Luddites were famous for hating the thought that manufacturing it came into the textile industry and there'd be looms and everything should be handmade. I'm not saying that. But there's no governing. It's like the go-kart with no governor. So do you get the adrenaline rush? Yep. Do you get a lot of wipeouts? Yep. But the people getting the adrenaline rush, and let's say they can navigate the whole course and come away and take their oodles of millions to go off to find something to do that's more enjoyable. What are they saying to those they left behind?
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to preach here, but it's just something that Tristan Harris, with Time Well Spent, somebody's got to start saying it. Well, in a pandemic, that's going to be harder to say right now because people are going to say, these are luxuries we can't afford to talk about right now because I don't have a job.
Sure. So you bring up the interesting point about the governor piece. We could go on for a long time about that, but that aside for a minute, when it comes to in the tech world, what is interesting, you mentioned during the pandemic, we have done pretty well. And there are an overwhelming amount of jobs currently for a lot of people. And we've struggled with that ourselves. We have people getting hit up for offers and trying to get recruited to other companies. So amidst that, how do you drive a higher purpose? How do we get to something that speaks more to the why and to question those things? I mean, what you're talking about sounds like a pretty large paradigm shift. I think it's really challenging just to get there. What do we do?
Yeah, it's a significant paradigm shift. So the man who coined that term, that phrase, is right. He says it takes at least a generation, which a generation about 35 years if you're going to shift this thing back.
Yeah,
I always find it fascinating to remember when Morse, who did Morse code, tapped out something, and he was so excited because it's reportedly he said, now Maine can know what Texas is doing. And it was Coleridge, the poet, who said, well, that assumes Maine really needs to know what Texas is doing. So to your question, we're back to this idea that was put out by Lord Moulton 100 years ago in a talk he gave in London, basically saying the greatness of any civilization is based on this domain of what he called obedience to the unenforceable. That you just do when we do what we ought to do. And so we've talked about this before, but imagine a circle. And the center of this circle is what's called the domain of obedience to the unenforceable. But imagine over on the right is a domain that wants to always encroach. It's called autonomy or free will or choice. And then on the opposite side is another domain that wants to press in called positive law. And in a nutshell, if you can imagine, so you have in the center, obedience to the unenforceable. On the right is autonomy or free choice, which is always, as he said, there's always places where that's appropriate. Like you wake up in the morning and say, I want to have granola. Fine, that's appropriate. On the left is what he called positive law. There always has to be some law. Like we put a street here in front of our house here. They put curbs. And that's, again, as a governor. So this is to curb where the cars ought to go. And that's appropriate. But Moulton's concern was we were heading into a world rapidly where this middle was shrinking. And so your question really requires you present that here's our business, but here's the big picture. And that's what the tech world is not, well, any world, frankly, is not particularly good at doing. It's saying, here's what we're trying to do. It could be phrased in a number of ways. What Lincoln tried to rephrase with Gettysburg is, we're part of an experiment, and this is the time to have it reborn, have it be born again. That's the Gettysburg Address. But again, when I say we as Americans are part of an experiment, how many people know what that experiment is?
Yeah, I was going to say, other than our conversations, I would have had no idea what you were talking about.
Yes. And so what happens is those who get involved in politics are politicized. They tend to be on one of these two edges. So the religious, the right, set aside the religious right, is over here on this thing called autonomy and individualism. That's just rampant through the faith community. And they want to expand that. And the same with, we don't need to go into all the details on that, but on the far left is positive law, where you have the left believes that if we expand government governance, there you go, see governor, we need more curbs, more sidewalks, more governance, and because that will create a just society. These two are encroaching. So if you don't have a big picture, Lincoln's, God bless him, I mean, he was aware of the experiment. We're not aware of that anymore, most. So that's pretty much it's going to be a polarized, dead-end fight between the right and the left. And with everybody claiming to be, or many claiming to be moderate, that we're in the middle. But then when you say the middle, what's the middle? It's all political. There's no sense of, well, the middle is the domain of obedience to the unenforceable, which I love. I love that phrase. Because set aside the great experiment as our nation, which was, for listeners, if you're unfamiliar, an experiment in self-governance. Can a people rightly govern themselves? History says no, and history says these experiments fail. They fail because people do not, as a corporate nation, do not do what they ought to do, are not obedient to what is unenforceable. And so they either opt for freedom and liberty, that's the French Revolution, that didn't turn out very well, over on the right, over on the left, expanding arm of government to where it runs most of your life under the banner of fairness. And that doesn't work out very well either. So, but think about if that's too broad, you can use that same model for marriage. So in other words, Pat, are you happily married?
I am.
Are you happily married because you would define is because I get to do my thing. I am free and autonomous and I can choose to do whatever I want to do.
That is not how I define it.
Okay, so the far right domain, you put some governance on. Far left would say, you are happily married because you can pull a sheet of paper out from somewhere that says you're legally married. And that's why you're happily married.
If only.
Positive law. So you say, so you've actually curbed positive law. So how is it you're happily married? In fact, here, we'll put it this way, in a frank way, you can use my life. So Mike, so why haven't you run out and had an affair? Next month marks for Kathy and I 39 years. My gosh, does that sound like 39? The answer would be no. Oh, because of that piece of paper you have somewhere in a file cabinet that you haven't seen forever? No. Oh, it's because you're not free to do that? Far right? No. Well, then why haven't you? I mean, I've traveled the world. You want to talk about the opportunities men, I guess women, I've never been a woman, but the opportunities you have when you're traveling. I mean, I'd be less than honest if I didn't say, you will hear one little devil on your left shoulder whisper in your ear, no one would ever know. Why didn't I? It's called obedience to what is unenforceable. Now, if you don't have that in a business where you'd say, yeah, listen, we could create a 65-page ethics manual that tries to get to every jot and tittle about how we're going to talk, the words we're going to use. By the way, Enron had a 65-page ethics manual. In other words, we're going to just have this domain of positive law just creep in as far as humanly possible, and that will govern how you behave. It will give you a great sense of this is a great place to work. Except, as we've talked about before, business used to be considered a cottage industry before the Industrial Revolution. The home was the economic engine. And so if I came over to your home, would I find that you and Maddie have written up a 65-page ethics manual for your marriage?
You would not.
Now, on the other side is we don't need no governance at all. We don't need no, so you come when you want to come to work, show up when you can, just freedom. Liberté.
You know, that's a really interesting perspective there, because even thinking about now with the fact that a lot of people are working from home, definitely in the tech world, there is a heavy domain of the unenforceable in terms of what you do with your daily hours. I mean, you could check out and just be available. You know, the classic fear of working, having a remote workforce is that no one will actually do anything. I mean, that, I can't think of a pretty greater example of the domain of the unenforceable in terms of how your team is spending their time when they are working from home.
Yes, it's yesterday in Brooks Brothers filing for bankruptcy. They were already seeing it falling off in suits, but they say, especially now since the pandemic, I mean, the running joke is the boom has been in sweatpants.
Yeah.
So you just don't, you don't dress up at all. But we also know that there's a lot of studies that people are actually more productive working from home. But again, you ask, what fuels productivity in tech? Right now, for those who are doing well, it is contributing to wage disparity, the widening gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Sure.
And that will motivate you. So I would argue that if the stock market, again, bears any relationship to reality, some would say right now, I don't know. But if it does, even if it doesn't, the fact is the rich are getting richer and being rewarded more. And tech is overwhelmingly one of the beneficiaries, even in the pandemic. Just Google the Fortune 100 and look at what they were 35, 40 years ago and look at what they are today. And it's not, I don't, so someone say, you know, for example, Bezos with Amazon has made, what, the number is
absurd.
So yeah, I wouldn't want to put it that way, but let's just say it's reportedly sometimes up to $34 billion. First, I've never read, in fact, I did read that he's not necessarily the most generous person out there. There is a point somewhere where you have to ask, this is absurd to have the number of homes you have. You can't, you know, it seems to be, the rumor is you can only be one in one at a time. And, but in a, here's the boomerang for tech. They've created a world that I'm sitting here in, I can be living in Peoria. I've been working my rear end off to get this small business going, this great little restaurant's getting high reviews and blah, blah, blah. I've been out of work. I couldn't even use the payroll protection program because I was, most of my expenses were rent. And Congress, in its brilliant foresight, didn't put that in. It had to go to wages. So I couldn't take advantage of it. So I'm out, and now 3 months into it, I've lost my customer base. I've got to file for bankruptcy. Except what the tech world has been allowing me to do is I see the lives that most people never knew Vanderbilt. And a lot of where his wealth went, didn't know where MacArthur's went, and you could just go on and on. And it's not that you begrudge that, but what you do become aware of is a yawning chasm between the haves. And we can say the top 10%. It's not just the 1%. And there is not a great deal of evidence out there that they are that they do what they ought to do, frankly. In other words, there's no governance on it. It's basically when I have filled up the kind of life I want, then I'll be philanthropic. So I love, again, what Bill and Melinda Gates are doing. I mean, I admire it. I'm not that familiar with it. And I love how they have basically said, you're going to spend down so you don't hand over to your heirs this immense fortune. But I ask myself, so your lives are insulated basically from the vagaries of the market and what have you, and you've insured that, and now you want to be generous. But what you've done is you first increased the domain of autonomy and free choice on yours. In other words, you're still free to choose to live exactly how you want to live, eat what you want to live, travel where you want to travel, because you travel in private planes, you don't have to worry about commercial. So your lifestyle is largely untouched. And then you're going to be generous. So what you've just done is expanded the right. You've got this in your company, Pat, frankly, because the owner just sold a fabulous place in another city somewhere. You know, so it's well known, $18 million. Now, again, this isn't wealthy people are bad people. That's not what we're saying. And we're not saying that they aren't particularly bright, can see markets and provide valuable services. They can. But there is something that's happening here that's akin to the Gilded Age of 120 years ago, where those who do come into good fortune, because I think affluence is inherently good in Scripture. God wanted the Israelites to go to a land overflowing with milk and honey. Those are pictures of affluence. But he wanted a whole nation to come into that, not 10% who first chalked out the boundaries of, okay, now we're set. I mean, I've heard that once. I've heard that, especially when I was a pastor for 8 years, the number of people said, well, once my company goes public, or once I find a buyer and do my exit, once I cash in on this, then I'll give. I'll be really generous. There's two stories in that. Jesus, first of all, saying, you fool. You're waiting till your barns are full, and you don't know that, for example, tonight I claim your life, you fool. You don't know what tomorrow brings. Second, Jesus said, if you're faithful in the little thing, you'll be faithful in the big thing. But if you're not faithful in the little thing, I'll tell you one of the best that we didn't mean this podcast turn into a thing on generosity, but the fact is, when Kathy and I got married, so you know, at that point, your next income tax you file, but she looks at my income tax before and she goes, that's all you gave?
Yeah.
So good news is 40 years ago. And we immediately, before all this social media, so nobody knew, I was, you know, fresh out of college, working at college ministry. I swore I was poor. But as soon as we were married, we immediately said, we're just going to find a way to start giving 11%. And then we're going to see how we can begin to increase that. And, you know, to sit there and say, we don't have the money is crazy. We have the money. But see, nobody, because everything is so private, all the way up to the Trump presidency about not wanting to reveal, is nobody knows. Nobody knows. And so when nobody knows, that's the... That's this right to privacy, far right of molten circle, free choice, expanding into and crushing out the moral middle. I mean, what I admire about the Clapham group of the from 1790 to 1833 is, you know, some of the wealthiest people like banker Henry Thornton, it was well known, he gave away 5/6 of his income. Last time I checked, that works out to be 83%.
You don't see that as often today.
Yeah, it's the exception proves the rule. And the rule is, and I get it. I mean, I get it that why do people play the lottery? The lottery is known as a shortcut to wealth. But it's not good fortune. It's not good fortune because you are skimming off from others who are probably playing in the same way. Mm. So it's a tax on the vulnerable is the best way to put it, which is immoral. It's a tax on the immoral. It's a tax on the vulnerable. And so you get one out of 330 or 360 million people cash in, make a quote fortune. That's just, That's a statement about how our American experiment is going. But in the same way, on an individual, you see this in tech, but you see in a lot of industries that are doing well. It is what you're facing that, hey, I'm in demand. People would stay, here's a way to put it. People would stay in a business such as the one, the company you're in, if they got what are called psychic paychecks or emotional paychecks that transcend the physical, the economic paycheck.
Hmm. What do you mean by that?
And that's actually proven out. Emotional paycheck is, you know what? I could make more. I'll give you an example. My wife, saint. Why? I won't tell you how little she's paid as a teaching, as a language technician for the public schools in this county. She was never certified as a teacher, didn't decide to do that, decided to go into a collegiate ministry. And but if you looked at what she made, you'd go, what? And so I'm going to brag on her just because, A, I'm not sure she listens to these podcasts. B, listeners who do know her, don't pass this on to her. No, you can. But she makes, well, superwoman's put it, people put it, she makes poo. And so why do you do it? Why do you get up and so you're at a bus stop when the Hispanic children are bundling off at 7 a.m. in the morning on a freezing cold January morning? I'll tell you why she does it. She feels like this is part of making the world a better place. These are little bundles of joy who are going to become cynical kids that are going to sour out if people don't invest in them. And I'm in this for what she calls the emotional or psychic, she wouldn't call it, but I would call it the emotional or psychic paychecks that transcend the money you make. Would she like to make more? Of course she would like to make more. Does she feel undervalued in terms of what she's paid? Yes, she feels that way. Why doesn't she quit? Because she feels it's obedience to one's unenforceable. She would say, from when she started to where she is today, it's a calling. And as a calling, she would be unembarrassed to say that, even if some people roll their eyes and go, oh, calling. And then I have met her colleagues, people of faith, no faith, differing faiths, other teachers. I would say the good eggs, the good ones, they're there because of a sense of calling, because they could probably make more somewhere else. And so they drive rattier cars or older cars. They can't travel the world. They can't eat at the fine restaurants. But the number of people who show up on a pop-up pantry for the Hispanic community now will be in their 12th. This will be our 12th Saturday morning coming up. It's now past 18,000 individuals have been helped because in this community, 75% in COVID-19 lost their job. 75%. They didn't qualify for PPP. They can't get a bank loan. Their business is in their trunk. What are you going to do? What you have, and it's mostly, by the way, a white crowd now of 150 volunteers who have given up Fridays and Saturdays, Friday's prep, and Saturdays to put together over the course of 2 to 3 hours, sometimes in a blistering sun, a 6-stage pop-up pantry, fresh produce, cooked meals, eggs, milk, diapers, my God, diapers galore, mountains of diapers. And you've never seen such appreciative people, all wearing their masks and gloves, all the people, the recipients stay in their cars, pop their trunks. And now why is she doing that? By the way, she makes no money for that. None. Why do you do that?
Got to be called to something higher for that. Man,
you've got to be called to something where you just go, this just simply ought not to be. So now there's pop-up pantries popping up all around the country. They are happening all around the world too. Around the world, at least around the U.S., by some really, really, really good people. But the fact of the matter is most of these people are not getting paid. So I'm not bragging. You know, Dizzy Dean, the famous baseball pitcher, said, it ain't bragging if you can do it. So I ain't bragging in terms of I work there on Saturday. Who's paying me to do that? Nobody. Would I like to have a day off? Yeah. Am I dog tired on Saturday afternoon? Yeah. Do I have a sense of that's worth it? Yes. And that's what so many in the tech world don't have is, I'll tell you what, I know this is making the world a better place. I'm in demand. But that's what that's why people stay at certain companies, Pat, is they get this sense of we actually don't spend a lot of time on our values and the rest because it's just apparent. That's why we're here. And I wouldn't trade this. You couldn't hire me away.
That's got me thinking about a lot. One of the things that gives me encouragement and makes me optimistic is I think you start to see pieces of that in the tech industry, whether it's a questioning of the bigger picture of what we're doing, of like you mentioned the TED talk on Twitter and whatnot of should we have done this, but also just internally I've seen and experienced myself this wave initially of tech is so exciting, we should just go out and build, it's exciting to touch new things. To now, fast forward a little bit, and you have just so much tech that's so easily accessible, where you have engineers who have built things, and then those things have gone away, and it's like, wow, I devoted these 80-hour weeks to building this thing that just no longer exists. And so instead of investing my time in the newest, latest, and greatest, I need to have a higher reasoning for why I'm going to invest my life into this thing.
I think that's a really good point. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say that gives me encouragement that I think we are seeing glimpses of what you're talking about. It makes me question as a leader, how do we help flush this out further? But I love what you said. That was great.
Yeah. So we'll close on that because what's tech that's also discovering is, as you said, the 80 hour week, and then you put this together and, but the disruptions are coming so rapidly. Mm-hmm. They're accelerating. So you can give yourself to something. And then when you're done, it's FNS. It's just. And so then COVID has accelerated these disruptions. I don't know what's going to come out on the other side. But yes, to your point. You know, there are those companies that started that said, we want 20% of your time to actually think on bigger things that are unrelated. I've heard that not many actually take advantage of that. But if they did, and we actually, my business partner and I have a possibility of working in one slice of the tech world to take advantage of that. Because if you do, you can widen the lens and say, here's the bigger picture. That could be a emotional paycheck for you to go, here's how tech can make the world a better place. But if you don't have any margins to widen the lens, you're right. You're going to be narrowly focused, Pat, and you're going to just slam through to get this thing done. You don't have time to put your head up. And frankly, for most of us, you're going to get to a certain age and you're just going to go, I'm tired. And you know what? I've made a killing. I'm going to pull out and find something I can do in the not-for-profit world and give back and be charitable. And you just set up a model that is only available to a small percentage of the population.